Hey everyone, this is Ashley Menzies Babatunde, your host and resident storyteller, and welcome to another episode of No Straight Path, the highs, the lows, and the lessons learned. No Straight Path is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. We are digging into the human stories behind success, and my hope, as always, is that you leave the conversation inspired, motivated, and excited about your journey.
So if you work through establishing you're in a setback and you embrace the discomfort and you gain the intel that you need, you get to move into phase three, which is explore. This is the most fun phase because it's non-committal. You're just playing with what's possible. You're turning to your community to test out ideas. You're tapping into your superpowers and you're kind of mapping out some ideas of how you're going to move forward.
Hey friends, hey, I hope you are well. Today we are talking about one of my favorite topics, which also served as the inspiration for the podcast, and that's setbacks. But before we get to today's guest, I want to tell you about another podcast that explores this theme as well. And that's the Thank You for Saying No podcast. I just love this title. Really fascinating guests from all walks of life share the gratitude that they experienced after being told no or saying no, and the lessons learned from those experiences. It's such a good podcast. You can listen to Thank You for Saying No on all podcast streaming platforms and on YouTube, and so you should definitely check it out. And today we're going to actually delve into the science and research behind setbacks. I had a wonderful conversation with USA Today bestselling author, journalist, and marketing consultant Amy Schoenthal. Throughout her career, she has worked with some of the world's largest brands, from Procter & Gamble to Google, providing strategic marketing guidance and helping shape their brand narratives. Blending her marketing expertise with her formal journalism training, Amy approaches storytelling as sense-making. And as a top contributor to Forbes Women and Harvard Business Review, she shines a spotlight on those who have been historically underestimated, yet are doing work to solve society's biggest problems. Years of interviewing hundreds of leaders, from politicians to Peloton instructors, fashion icons to founders just starting their journeys, inspired her best-selling book, The Setback Cycle, which offers a framework to help people persevere through triumph over setbacks. So, as you know, this is the theme I love. I love to talk about this. And it was really interesting because Amy gives a high-level overview of this framework, and it was so helpful, and it really shifted my perspective on how we think about setbacks. I definitely think I had one specific view, but it's actually more nuanced than that. So I'm definitely going to take her framework and advice as I move forward in my journey, and I just can't wait to learn more from her book, which is also in the show notes. And I actually can't wait for y'all to hear this conversation, so let's get to it. Hi, Amy. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. As you know, just the work that you're doing is so aligned with the work that I like to talk about. And so thank you for just coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And so I know we're going to talk about your work, but I do like to get to know the human behind the work first. And so I just want to know a little bit more about you, about your story. Can you just tell us how you grew up? Tell us about how perhaps your childhood self, or even if it's your high school self or college self, how that shows up in the work that you're doing today?
Yep, of course. I grew up in the suburbs of New York City. And I always wanted to be a writer. So I'm like pretty consistent throughout my childhood to adult life. I remember being at summer camp when everyone was doing like gymnastics and water slides and swimming and all kinds of like really fun stuff. And I was walking around with my little notebook trying to interview people. So I have always been like this, very curious about people wanting to know their stories and wanting to write their stories. I actually majored in journalism in college, and I did public relations for a tech incubator on campus that helped student entrepreneurs kind of, you know, birth their businesses from their dorm rooms. And I was going around and interviewing them, and I wanted to find out their story so I could put it into more of like a press release format, and then we could send it to the media. And then one of the people that I interviewed during that time went on to become the founder of Squarespace. So that's my fun little college fact. So my career interviewing founders and leaders and entrepreneurs who are doing innovative work started very early on, not only as a little kid in camp interviewing people, but certainly in college interviewing, again, like today, some of today's most prominent leaders straight from their dorm rooms. And when I graduated college, I went into marketing because it is very hard to, you know, I had student loans. I wanted to move to New York City and get my own apartment. It was very hard then to make a living as a journalist or a writer of any kind. It's even harder now. So I went into a career in marketing, which I am so glad I did because I have since paid off my student loans. I mean, it took a long time, but I did it. And I was able to, you know, have a career, have a life, support myself, now support my family. And I always continued writing as a freelancer. So I would contribute to different publications here and there. In around, I think it was 2016 or 17, I started contributing to Forbes. And when I had my daughter in 2018, that's when I was sort of sidelined from my marketing job because marketing isn't like super friendly to mothers or women over 40. And I am now both. And so I didn't really ignore the signs that that was coming. I knew I would need some sort of backup plan. And, you know, to process what I was going through, I turned to writing. I started asking really intense questions of the people I was interviewing. Hey, like, what did you go through to get there? What kind of setbacks did you encounter? What obstacles did you overcome to build what you built? And they started candidly sharing their stories, which made for very good articles. And through that, my freelance writing career took off a little bit. I got a little more visibility. I was given the opportunity to interview even more high-profile people. I was, you know, asked to speak on stages and at conferences and, you know, talk more about my work. That's what led to the book deal. That's what led to me coming up with the idea that, like, there is something more than just like learning from our mistakes and post-traumatic stress. Like, everyone kind of goes through the same cycle. What is it? Who's talking about it? How can we name it? And I didn't find anything. So I went and I started interviewing experts, and that's how I came up with the setback cycle.
Ah, oh, I love that. I love how you're able to literally go from your childhood to the setback cycle in the span of 3 minutes because you
just— It's all connected.
It is. It is all connected to just your childhood self interviewing people and then having that amazing opportunity in college and also talking about the practical aspects of that. I love that you did that as well and said, hey, I really love journalism, but marketing made sense. And there's certainly a lot of overlap there with PR, marketing, journalism, but it was a way for you to support your family and then that transition. And I think I feel that very reflected in my story as well. It's like, I was looking at journalism too. And my professor said, hey, if you don't come for money, maybe the law school. And like, you know, yeah. But still doing it on the side and always doing that work. And I think that's incredible. And so it's led you to this path today where you're on this podcast with me chatting about the book. And so I want to get to the book. Tell us a little bit more about the setback cycle and tell us more about that story.
Of course. Like I said, I kept interviewing people for the articles I was writing and I kept seeing a pattern. And every time I would interview someone, they started really lighting up and getting excited to tell me the part of their story when they encountered some sort of obstacle, something that bumped them backwards, and they were talking about how they were able to work through it. And it just always seemed like the same formula, you know, from the biggest celebrity, the most prominent founder, to the earliest stage startup founder just getting their feet wet into the world of entrepreneurship. And I was like, why is this happening? Why am I seeing the same themes? And so, like I said, I went into research mode. I started reading all the business psychology books and all the, like, everything I could find on positive psychology and post-traumatic growth and resilience and all the things that you hear about. But no one was touching on a concept that spanned all of it, you know, because not every setback is a trauma. Not every setback is a mistake you made. The actual definition of a setback is a reversal or check in progress. So it is when you are moving forward on some path, whether it is, you know, career, a business, a relationship, some sort of forward momentum, and you are unexpectedly bumped backwards. And so it could be a trauma, it could be a mistake, but it also could be neither of those things. And so I saw the reversal in progress for all of these people. And once I came upon the definition of a setback, I was like, that's it. That's what I am seeing. And then I went on my, okay, I am seeing this theory. Let's see what the experts think. And I went and I interviewed a couple of psychologists, a couple of executive coaches, a neuroscientist, because I said, if this is so common, it must be biological or something like that, you know? And I was right. The neuroscientist, her name is Chantal Pratt. She wrote The Neuroscience of You. And I read the book and then I interviewed her. And she told me that she was able to prove in her lab that people who have worked through setbacks are better at problem solving, reasoning, and creativity. And those are all the traits of a successful founder and leader and innovator, you know?
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. And so you actually changed my thinking a little bit on how we even conceptualize what a setback is. And so I'm curious about an example where the setback isn't necessarily a trauma. It isn't necessarily a mistake. Can you tell us a little bit more about perhaps this positive connotation that is maybe associated with the setback?
I don't know that a positive connotation is associated with a setback. It's not like you're gonna read the book. I mean, it's great if you have a deeper understanding of an experience that you have had or will inevitably have. And that's the purpose of the book, to understand your own life experience and to give you the tools to work through it. But that doesn't mean that when you encounter your next setback and things aren't going well or you're bumped backwards in a big way or a small way, it doesn't mean it's gonna be a positive experience. Still not going to be great. It's still going to feel icky. And that's part of going through the cycle, to embrace the ick. Actually, phase two is called embrace. And so you have to kind of soak it in and understand why it's happening or why it's impacting you so much in order to work your way out of it, really. And so the book does not glorify pain or suffering or tell you that you're going to walk into your next setback pumped about it.
Okay.
We're not unrealistic here. What it will do is give you the tools to work through it. And I do think that once you understand your own, like as you said, you're kind of seeing your own life experiences maybe through this lens now that we're talking about it, it's nice to understand that, oh, I've been through that, so I can get through it again.
Yeah, yeah. And are there any particular stories that stick out to you that you'd like to share?
One of the things that I learned through a lot of this research and a lot of the stories was that it's very common for people to like not even realize that they're encountering a setback and they're like willingly walking into it. So one of the people I interviewed, one of the Peloton instructors, her name is Kendall Toole. She is boxing and cycling instructor on Peloton. And when she was in college, she had a very extreme mental health episode. And she, you know, she was a straight A student, a cheerleader. She did all the extracurriculars, all the things. Her anxiety was manifesting as perfectionism and overperformance. And I think that's so many people. Hers got so extreme that, again, you know, she had a very severe mental health episode. She had to work her way out of it. She went into intensive therapy. She went home to live with her parents for a while. She had to like take some time off of school. And she, you know, remembers that her parents said to her at this time, or her dad said to her, like, we don't, you know, you can get knocked down, but we won't let this knock you out. Mm. And that became her motto. And sure enough, she turned to physical fitness, she turned to boxing to really like get her mind focused on something and away from the anxiety and away from the perfectionism, really. So she found this really great outlet. It was helping her so much. She became a teacher. Fast forward, and she, you know, was recruited to go work at Peloton. And now she really candidly shares her very vulnerable story with like millions of people who are working out with her. And so she's become such an advocate of mental health awareness and seeking help when you need it and all of these great things. But, you know, her setback, yes, she had like one specific episode that was very impactful, but she really was sort of drifting into it slowly, you know, without even realizing it, because she was ignoring her pain. She was ignoring her suffering. And again, she was using these outlets like overperformance and signing up for all these extracurriculars to sort of like run away from her setback. And of course, you know that it when you run away from the discomfort, it comes up in a big way. Hopefully, again, not as dramatic as hers, but this is what tends to happen. And so many of us really sleepwalk into these setbacks. And that's why phase one of the setback cycle is establish, because you have to establish the moment you're in order to work through it. Phase two is embrace, because you have to now, once you establish it, you have to feel the discomfort and you have to like absorb the data. You have to absorb the information so that you understand what clues you're getting from this. And so you can move forward in a way that's maybe somewhere different than where you were going before. So you don't rinse and repeat and find yourself back in a setback immediately, you know, take the clues, glean the data and use it to inform your next step.
You know, you talked about phase one and phase two, and now I'm just curious, can you tell us about three and four?
I can. So phase one and two are the hardest, frankly. Phase three and four are way more fun. So if you work through establishing you're in a setback and you embrace the discomfort and you gain the intel that you need, you get to move into phase three, which is explore. This is the most fun phase because it's non-committal. You're just playing with what's possible. You're turning to your community to test out ideas. You're tapping into your superpowers and you're kind of mapping out some ideas of how you're going to move forward. And explore is really just that playful phase. Again, you don't have to blow up your life. If you realize you're in a setback, like you realize, oh, I'm not engaged with my job anymore. I have to leave immediately. You don't have to leave immediately. Like, take some time, figure out what you like and don't like about it, and figure out what you might want to do moving forward, and just start to dip a toe, perhaps in another industry, perhaps go learn some new skills, maybe talk to some people who are in a different industry or a different field that you might be able to learn from. You know, I don't want people to be like, I'm in a setback. Let me just go totally pivot without a plan. Like, I don't want people to be without health insurance or without, you know, the ability to pay their rent. There's no need to do that. You can stay in the explore phase for as long as you need to figure out the path forward. That's when you get to phase four, which is the final phase of the setback cycle, emerge. And that's when you come out of your setback. Now, emerge is not all, you know, sunshine and roses. There are some pitfalls you can fall into when you get there, like all the planning and all the absorbing of information and all of the plotting can be exhausting. So when you get into emerge, you might just need a moment to relax, to rest, to take a pause before you pivot. And so then you can sort of shed your cocoon and emerge with your glorious new wings and, you know, fly away as the metamorphosis is complete.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm curious if you have any examples that stuck with you for the three and four phase, for the exploring phase from your book. Is there anyone that sticks out?
Sure. One of my favorite stories is that of Norma Kamali. She's a very well-known fashion designer. She's now in her 70s and she is still just like absolutely rocking it. I just spoke to her like last month, and she is just innovating as much as someone possibly can. So she has not slowed down. But when she was first starting out, it was, I think, like the 1950s or 60s. She was in a relationship, she was married, and she let her husband run the business. I'll do the designs, he'll run the financials. Well, he ran the business into the ground. He cheated on her. It was like he was out partying, she was doing the work. And one day, like one of the women he was cheating on her with came into the shop, went into Norma's back, you know, workstation, started talking to her. And Norma was just like, what is going on? And at that moment, the ceiling of her workstation just totally crashed down over her. And she said, if there was ever a sign to leave, this is it. So she walked away. She left everything. She said, I completely want to cut ties. She left him the business. I mean, there was no one designing clothes, so what was the business at this point? But she walked away with $98 to her name. And a few years later, you know, she started asking for help. She was very worried, obviously, because she had nothing. She had an apartment with no furniture, and she just started asking for help. She asked for a sewing machine. She asked for some material. She was Norma Kamali, so she started making clothing again. And she rebuilt her business, and she renamed it, I believe, 3 years later as OMO, On My Own. And only a few years after that, I think it became a multi-million dollar business, global brand. And she has been innovating in the fashion industry for over 50 years. You know, she got there because of a setback.
Yeah.
The ceiling literally crashed down over her workstation. I mean, and she said, you know, there's always this moment that you're so grateful for because it gives you the power to walk away.
Wow. I love that story so much. And can I tell you, I am wearing Norma Kamali pants.
Oh my God.
Right now.
That's amazing.
Yes. They are the most comfortable because I'm also pregnant right now. Yeah. So they're chic, but then they show off my belly bump so well. Yeah. So I love that. And I didn't know her story. So I'm so happy that you're—
There's much more to her story in the book. Like it's much more detailed. I just kind of glossed over, you know, that big dramatic part, but she is so fascinating, so incredible. And yeah, she is the best clothing. She's always been sort of celebrating women's bodies at every stage of life in this way. So I love that you're talking about how they're super comfortable, but also flattering while pregnant. So
yes, I feel very chic right now. So
you look very chic.
But I can't wait to read your book because I want to learn more about her story and all the other stories that you tell. And really just the research as well. Was there anything particularly interesting or surprising from the research that you've done for the book?
Well, I found it so surprising that so many people don't realize that they're entering into a setback. Like, that's why I came up with phase one as established, because like, I couldn't believe it, you know? And then once I learned it, I realized that I have done this. You know, I have walked into a setback thinking like, oh, it's fine. It's fine. Like other people have it worse. I can handle this. And I actually recently, you know, I share my story in the book about how I was, I don't want to scare you because times are different now, but I was very much sidelined in my career when I came back as a mother. And it didn't go very well. I was removed from an account that I had worked so hard to build while pregnant. And I was, my responsibilities were diminished on another account. And so I just felt like my job was so minimized when I came back and I had less responsibility. I was responsible for less business. And there was no discussion of it. It was just, these decisions were made based on assumptions, not by conscious choice. Oh, your replacements did a good job. We'll let them continue on. But no discussion of what that meant for me. And I saw that as, oh, you're right. Like they really did do a good job. They did. That's totally true. And I agreed. I said, yeah, they should get this opportunity, you know, let them continue to run these accounts. That's great. And everyone around me said, this is so great for you because you have a new baby at home. You should have less responsibility at work. This is such a gift. And everything that people were doing and saying, everyone had such good intentions and everyone was trying their best, but it was not congruent with how I felt inside. I was energetic. I was excited to bring that energy back to work. But what happens when you sideline an ambitious woman or a mother?
Yeah.
She turns her energy and ambition elsewhere. And that's why my freelance writing career took off the year after I had my daughter.
Yeah.
I turned all my ambition there. But I didn't see it until years later when my coworker, who worked very closely with me on my team, said to me, I'm leaving the agency because I want to be a mother one day. And I saw what happened to you when you became a mother. You were a great leader and you were prevented from leading. And I was like, what? It's like,
oh, wow.
Oh my God. Wait, number one, you saw what happened to me and it wasn't just me. That's so validating. But number two, how could I have let this happen? How did I not speak up for myself? How did I not think about the impact I was making on future parents or people who were watching what happened to me? And I felt awful, but it woke me up. And what I realized in my research was how many people really are unconscious about the setbacks that they are willingly walking into. It was not just me.
Mm.
And one of the reasons I wrote the book was so people could wake up earlier than I did. And so people could understand that even if it's fine, and other people have it worse, and you could keep going, you don't have to. You can acknowledge the moment you're in without removing any of the, you know, acknowledgments of any level of privilege or any, you know, the fact that maybe others have it worse. Of course, that might be true, but it could still be a very personal setback. And the sooner you wake up from it, the sooner you can start working through the cycle.
I think that is So true. I think that's such a gem because you don't want to invalidate your experiences, because you can say that by just being born here in America or being able to live here in America. What I think is important is that when we are looking at our lives, it's how can I be the best version of myself with all of the privileges that I have, right? Like, it's not just because I have these privileges. You know, some people say, oh, I felt so guilty. I've heard people on the podcast, and even I've talked about this in my own personal experience, when you're perhaps in a position that everybody else would want. I had a friend come on the podcast who is an NFL player, height of his career, doing well, went to the Super Bowl, unfulfilled inside. Everyone's telling him this is amazing, goes on to write, because that's what's inside of him, creates a hit show, and is giving, you know, the impact that he wants to the world, making the impact that he wants. And so I think that despite whatever level of privilege you have, we all deserve to be happy. We all deserve to be able to tap into our gifts. And I love that you talk about that in the book, that you've recognized that in your own experience. And I'm curious about what advice you would give to someone who is perhaps in your position right now. I know the workplace has certainly gotten better and every institution is different, but we have a long way to go. We don't have paid leave, you know, no federal paid leave for parents. You talk to a lot of people, they say the workforce in America isn't still built for parenthood. And so for an ambitious woman or human that is working in their career and they perhaps are family planning or just had a child or maybe me.
Yeah.
You know, what advice do you have for that person?
Well, I have so much advice, but it also, like, number one, it really just depends on you and your situation and what you want. And being honest with yourself, I think in a way that it took me a really long time to realize what I truly wanted and needed in that moment. And I pretended that everything was fine for far too long. I would just say, try to really tap into your truest needs and what your values are and what you stand for, even if the outside world is telling you you should be a certain way or you should be grateful for this moment, because that can be true while the other stuff is true. Of course, I was grateful for the position I was in and the, you know, having less responsibility while having a child at home. And yes, other people have it worse. I think it's so much worse if you go back to work and you face blatant motherhood discrimination or blatant pregnancy discrimination. I had none of that. I had well-intentioned coworkers who were just a little bit thoughtless, you know, and didn't ask me, you know, what I might need. And I don't know if I would have even been able to answer at that moment because I was very confused. Think about the impact you're having on those around you. That's really my biggest piece of advice, because I think if I had considered that a little earlier, I might have, I don't know, woken up or been more vocal when I was alerted to the fact that other people were paying attention to my setback that I was working through. I became more vocal about it. I talked to my manager. I said, hey, this wasn't cool. And like, don't do this with the next person who has a child. It was an uncomfortable conversation, but I had it, you know? When I, you know, a couple of years later, I was caught up in a round of layoffs from that same firm. I stayed. I climbed back up the mountain. I built, you know, myself back up. And then I was caught up in a round of layoffs years later. When I was laid off, I had already started consulting on the side. I had a few clients. I had my LLC formed. I had already written the book. I submitted my final manuscript for the setback cycle 48 hours before I was laid off. And when they offered me a severance package, that was, you ready? I had worked there for 8 years. They gave me 8 weeks severance. That was their first offer. When I asked for them to increase it, they said, we will only increase it if you give us the right to see what's written about us in the book and for us to weigh in on it and edit it. And we will only increase it and we'll only pay you anything if you edit it to our liking. I walked away from severance. I said, that is an inappropriate amount of control. And you're also like being so stingy with the amount of money you're offering me for that level of control that like, this is just not worth it. And so I now have the power to share my story in the way that I think other people need to really hear it.
Yeah.
Because my setback was not dramatic. It was slow. It was subtle. It was from someone with all the privilege. I was a senior level, you know, white woman manager. And still this happened to me. So what does that mean when you go down the spectrum of marginalized communities? Like, it's not good. And people need to at least be aware of it so that they can plan for it. Taking on all those, you know, freelance writing gigs and saying yes to all the speaking engagements and writing a book while full-time employed, like doing all these things on the side, that all became my lifeline when I was laid off. So I didn't have to accept that severance package. I didn't have to muzzle myself or, you know, sort of sanitize the story of being sidelined after maternity leave because I had planned ahead once I woke up.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you woke up. I'm so glad that you're sharing your story. This is definitely very helpful for me and very inspiring. And I also think you said something a little bit earlier too, which I do want to highlight because I think it's important, is that we can be grateful as well at the same time. So I think that these things aren't mutually exclusive. You can be extremely grateful for your life and still work towards things that feel better aligned. And right. So that's the message, because no, I'm a huge gratitude person. I have my gratitude journal, but that doesn't mean, you know, not changing things up or not getting out of that setback. Thank you for all of the gems. I always end the podcast with final thoughts. So if you have any final thoughts, I'd love for you to share them.
Well, I just want to say to anyone who is working through a setback right now, or if you've been listening and realize that either something you experienced was a setback, or maybe you kind of just woke up and realized that you're in one right now, know that you will emerge from this with a sense of all you are capable of and all the possibilities available to you. This is a book about difficult experiences, but it is an optimistic book. It is not toxic positivity level optimistic, but it is realistic, and it will just give you the tools you need to gain that understanding and see your experiences through a new lens and emerge with a level of confidence and capability that you probably never thought was possible. So you've got this. That's my final thought. You've got this.
Thank you for listening to another episode of No Straight Path, the highs, the lows, and the lessons learned. Remember to share the podcast with friends and family. And my hope is that these stories help you navigate your No Straight Path journey. If this content is adding value to your life, and I hope it is, please take a few minutes out of your day to rate the show and write a review. You can click the link in the show notes to write a review. It helps other listeners find the show, and I just really appreciate it. Have a lovely week, embrace the journey, and remember, you're not alone.